morning. I am Yada, and this is Shattering Myths. Each weekday morning on the Genesis Communication Network, we expose and condemn the beguiling and destructive myths associated with religion and politics, with patriotism in the media, and with military and economic schemes. This morning, we're going to focus on the economic aspects of the great myths that are tearing our country and world apart. If you'll listen, we'll open your eyes and change your mind towards each of these things, upon which most people are foolishly and counterproductively dependent. Instead of merely presenting the news, our mission will be to help you actually understand what's really occurring behind the headlines. We will reveal the motivations of the perpetrators and share what you can do to protect your family, all the while predicting how these events will shape America and the world over the next 20 years. Then, during our second hour, we're going to engage Yahweh on his terms, by way of his one and only covenant, and through his always dependable Torah teaching, so that God's guidance will enable you to replace religion with reason. Our number, should you wish to question, criticize, or affirm anything I or our guest today, Craig Smith, has to say, is 877-300-7645. It's my pleasure to introduce Craig Smith. Craig is the CEO of Swiss American. It is a very substantial supplier of gold and other precious metals. And while I don't typically endorse products on this program, I can tell you that almost all of my savings is invested in gold. And I have done so because I have studied the actions of the Federal Reserve. I've studied the actions of my government and come to conclude that our government and the Federal Reserve collectively have destroyed the value of our currency, and therefore gold is amongst the best, if not the single best, investment. Now, we crossed paths with Craig Smith, I mean that in a positive way, about 2 weeks ago. He had sent out a press release as a commentary on the last election. And that press release said that as a result of that election, that America had gone from the Declaration of Independence to the Declaration of Dependence. Good morning, Craig. How are you this morning?
Good, Yada. Good to be with you.
Well, it's my pleasure. You know, I was so intrigued by what you wrote in that article and began to do some research and found that, you know, it's statement of fact that that half of Americans now receive a check from the federal government, and half of Americans pay no tax.
Yeah, indeed, that's the truth. And most people would think that if we said that, it would be a myth, but that's a reality. And it's sad because we had a huge change in this country, Yada, in 1912 when we elected our first, if you will, progressive politician by the name of Woodrow Wilson.
Yeah.
Who was really one of the belief that government is here to feed you, clothe you, bathe you, protect you, change your diapers, do everything for you. And the first thing he did in 1913 was allow the passage of the Federal Reserve Act, which he immediately signed.
Clandestinely, by the way. I mean, it wasn't he didn't do it above board. He orchestrated it on Jekyll Island, out of sight. The participants were not announced. They were told to disguise what they were doing, so it was called federal, even though it was a private cartel, and it was called a reserve, even though they would have no capital. The whole thing, and they even tried to disguise the notion that it was a central bank by having 10 or 12 branches across the country. The whole thing was specifically designed to fool.
Yeah, and it was interesting how it did that, Yada, especially just by using the name. It's not federal and has
right.
No reserves, yet we call it, I mean, it's no more federal than Fred Smith's Federal Express, for Pete's sake.
And it'd be nice to Fred. Now, Fred's a friend of mine.
Well, obviously, hey, we should give him the post office. It would be run efficiently.
Absolutely.
And it would be a profit.
That's true.
You're right. It was done in the secret of night. What most people don't understand is the Jekyll Island Accords, of which you speak about, became the Federal Reserve Act of 1913. And there were people like Louis T. McFadden who stood up and put up a huge argument against it, saying, we can't do this. You're consolidating the financial powers of the future of this world into the hands of literally the politicians. And nobody wanted to listen. But what's interesting is if you look at the program that Mr. Wilson had in mind, and ultimately what Mr. Franklin Roosevelt had in mind, and then what Mr. LBJ had in mind. They wanted this cradle to grave mentality. And the only way that you could do that is if you could create the money to put people on the dole. And that's why we're a nation of dependence versus a nation of independence.
Now, Craig, the only thing that troubles me a bit about what you just said is that I'm in complete agreement that the Colonel House, who was the chief aide to Woodrow Wilson, conspired to create a nation of socialistic dependence. And that FDR advanced that immeasurably, and that FDR, not anyone else, can be blamed for the Great Depression, particularly its length and depth. And that it was exacerbated because of his war against business and his desire to create this grand society. And that LBJ, when you track the rise of America's deficit and the decline of its economic productivity, you go right to LBJ and his great society. We're in complete agreement, at least I think we are up to that point. My problem is what happened after them. We give Reagan credit for being this great supply-side small government mentality, and while his supply-side tax concept worked beautifully, the country raised more revenue on lower taxes and the economy became robust, he was a very big spender. And not only was Reagan a big spender, but you go after Reagan, and King George II was also a huge spender, and collectively, those guys who have R's after their name as opposed to D's and bankrupt the country. So it doesn't end, unfortunately, with LBJ. It's now Republicans acting like Democrats and Republicans doing even more damage than the Democrats did.
Well, yeah, I would argue they did equal amounts. I'm not sure they did more. But you're right.
Okay. Then we're in agreement there. I probably exaggerated to say they did more. But it's certainly equally devastating.
Oh.
And I'll share some numbers here with you in a moment that that may make my more somewhat credible. But go ahead. I mean, you're in agreement that these guys were disastrous.
Let's back up a minute. I would agree with you that the damage was both sides should accept responsibility. Republicans stopped becoming Republicans. They started allowing big government to become the norm. And I really believe in 2008 in the first election, Mr. McCain really stopped being a Republican. He tried to play to
Correct.
The middle, as they call it, which has now
Correct.
Become the edge of the left side.
And
there's really no difference between the two. That's why it blows my mind right now that we're hearing about tax increases in Washington, D.C. coming from the Republican Party. But let's go back to what you said about Reagan, because you're right. We had a seminal change in America during Reagan. And
yes.
he was a big spender. But we have to keep in mind, at the end of his term, he raised taxes on the promise
yes.
that the Democrats would stop spending, and they didn't stop spending. They kept spending, and you know what that led to. Now, you're right,
right.
about Bush. Yes, he had a Democratic Congress for a number of his years, but he had a veto pen. Why didn't he pull that
yeah.
veto pen out and say, I'm not going to sign these spending bills. They're not going to get off my desk. You guys go back and get this under control. So you're absolutely right.
No, he was worse than that. He was worse than that. He actually advanced as his first bit of legislation, prescription programs to Medicare that were among the most expensive that our government has ever had to endure.
Sure.
And he engaged America into two counterproductive wars. And you can't credit the wars to him as, well, that's why his deficits grew so large. Both of those wars were made America less safe than more safe.
Yeah, you and I would probably argue about that, but fair enough. I mean, you know, hindsight's always 20/20. But
no, I had foresight on both wars. I met with George W. Bush. I know him. I also know McCain. Knew the McCain in the first time that he tried to run against, win the nomination against George W. Bush, where he was a moderate and I think would have been a decent candidate. And then I watched the McCain who actually won the nomination, who became as liberal as anyone, just to prevail.
I had met George Bush when he was governor of Texas. I didn't talk to him when he was in the White House, but I'm very familiar with John McCain. He's been in my office several times because I obviously live in Arizona. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you that I fully agree with you with John McCain. I'm no big fan of John McCain's because I'm convinced, Jada, that he cost us the White House in 2008.
Yeah, I would agree.
He held the line, and he had exposed what was going on in the Barack Obama campaign. Mr. McCain probably would have won in a landslide regardless of the economic crisis we were in. But you're right. He became a liberal. But that being set aside, let's not get away from...
Just one comment on John McCain. I've had him in my home. I've been in John's office. When John was running against George Bush, I was hugely in favor of McCain over Bush because I got to know George Bush as well. And I was horrified by the man I got to know. And McCain seemed to be a reasonable choice if the choice was George Bush or John McCain. But McCain changed. And I think that in the last election, he probably would have been no better than Obama. But the reasons that I say that are because he changed so radically.
Oh, no, you're absolutely right. And I remember when he ran his senatorial campaign in 2010 against J.D. Hayworth, who happens to be a very close friend. And what happened in that campaign was crazy because here he was asking for amnesty. He was an open borders guy. And all of a sudden he's, you know, closed the damn border. Excuse my English, because that's how his commercials ran. And all of a sudden he went from being this guy who was totally open borders into we got to close the borders because the polls were showing if he didn't go that way, he'd have a tough time winning Arizona.
Correct.
But that being said, I think we both agree that politicians are politicians. You know, and they do what politicians do. And what we have to understand is, where is the end game? I'm convinced that America is slowly, if you will, the frog in the cold water and you turn it up and he boils. We're slowly getting used to this whole concept, Yada, that our freedom, that our independence, that our liberty is something that will be secured by a government who watches us more, who takes care of us more, who's there in times of trouble to bail us out. And I would argue, Yada, that that is not freedom, that is slavery.
Yeah, it is dependence. And I would argue that anyone who is reliant on their government for any of those things is misguided, because the government will fail those individuals 100% of the time. And that is what we're headed towards, is a complete and utter collapse of our government. We'll be back with Craig Smith after the break. This is Shattering Myths. Please stay with us. To Shattering Myths. I am Yetta, and we have as our special guest today Craig Smith of Swiss American. You can find him at buygold.com. Craig, I wanted to share some thoughts with you. I'm going to say something that you'll probably, I think you'll agree with the facts, because the facts are as the facts are. I think you'll disagree with my change in conclusion here over the fiscal cliff, though, recently. Here's some to frame the issue. 24 years ago, Reagan walked into office. He cut taxes from 70% and ultimately down to 28% prior to raising them slightly. But taxes went from 70% to 28% on the highest wage earners. During this 24-year period, revenues for the federal government have risen from $600 billion to $2.5 trillion. In other words, revenues over the last 24 years have increased four times. Spending, unfortunately, has grown over that same period from $680 billion when Reagan entered office to this current year is $3.8 trillion. In other words, spending has increased 5.6 times. During this period of time, the federal deficit has grown from under a $900 billion to over $16 trillion. It has increased between 17 and 18 times. We have a train wreck here. This is so spiraled out of control, I think it's a train wreck. Now, I would like you to comment on that, and then I'd like to speak a bit about the fiscal cliff, because I've actually changed my mind recently on it. Is it as bad as these numbers indicate, or have we missed something here?
No, they are that bad, Yada, and that's the sad part about it. Again, it's probably poor taste to correct, but it was Reagan took office 31 years ago, not 24, but the numbers fit in your 24-year cycle. I mean, and the numbers are so far out of control. I mean, you got to think about it. Did you ever think we'd be talking in terms of trillion, other than distances between planets in the universe? And yet we're talking about it in the form of our money system today. And that's why, you know, if you remember Richard Russell years ago, he said, we have a disease at the base of our monetary system. It's called the ability of the Federal Reserve to create trillions of dollars by the push of a button with no creativity, no productivity. You've done nothing to do it other than create it. And yet we have people working for that money that is intrinsically worthless. And that's why I think it's gotten so large now, Yada, that people have lost the concept of what it means. I mean, does anybody really grasp $1 trillion anymore? We just had this Powerball lottery. Everybody was frantic to go out and buy tickets, $500 million. That is nothing compared to $1 trillion, for Pete's sake. And so, yes, it's a train wreck. You're absolutely right. It's going to hit the wall. And I bet you and I have changed on the fiscal cliff quite a bit, because I was on with Neil Cavuto a couple weeks ago arguing that we had to avoid the fiscal cliff. Now, quite frankly, I think we should go off of it. It'll cut the deficit in half overnight. Okay, and it will force us to make the decisions that should have been made, as you suggest, 24 years ago.
Then we're in exactly the same position. I was opposed to the issues. Yeah, I was opposed to the issues of the fiscal cliff because I'm opposed to increasing taxation. I think that if you want to increase government revenues, which is not something I particularly want, but it's probably needed today. But if you want to stimulate the economy, particularly in the private sector, you have to lower taxes. So I was opposed to the notion that taxes have to be raised. But then as I studied more, I realized that the Bush-era tax cuts didn't benefit primarily the highest wage earners, as being discussed now. When Bush put together his tax cuts, he did two things. He eliminated tens of millions of Americans from paying taxes, which means now they have no concept of what it means to pay tax, which means they don't understand why lowering tax rates will stimulate the economy. There are a total disconnect from that. And second, the median American family earning about $55,000 to $60,000 a year has a marginal U.S. federal tax rate of about 5%. And so what we have is the majority of Americans either paying nothing or under contributing to their government. And so repealing the Bush tax cuts would actually be a positive thing in terms of getting more people at least engaged in the game where they understood the concept of taxation. And correct. Second of all, our government spending doesn't need to be trimmed a little. It needs to be trimmed a lot. What you say is that it would ultimately cut the deficit in half. No, what it's going to do is it's going to cut the growth of the deficit in half. If you actually want to cut the existing debt in half, what you'd have to do is cut government spending in half. I mean, if you look at the numbers, you actually have to reduce government spending by 50% if you want to diminish the aggregate side of the U.S. deficit. When we return after the break, I would love to discuss this with you and come to understand why you, too, have changed your position relative to the fiscal cliff. This is Craig Smith. You can reach him at buygold.com. To Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yada. We have, as our guest today, Craig Smith. You can reach Craig at buygold.com. Craig is the author of many books on the economy. I think he actually understands the U.S. economy better than probably any American. Craig, we're talking about what needs to be done and to actually diminish the U.S. Federal deficit, which is now over $16 trillion. My sense is that because I don't think we're going to do what is required to actually diminish the amount that we're adding to it, I think we'll be at $20 trillion in debt within the next 4 years. And that somewhere along that path, I sense that our debt becomes unserviceable. And my inclination is for two reasons. One is that our total debt to GDP will be so high that we'll be like Greece without a mother European community to back us up, and so our bond ratings are going to decline, making it riskier. And the fact that we've destroyed the value of our currency, interest rates have to go up. And when we begin servicing $16 to $20 trillion of debt at normalized interest rates, that will double the amount that we add to the debt, making it doubly difficult to finance. Am I missing something here, or are we in real trouble?
No, you just capsulized it perfectly, Yada, and that's why, Admiral Mike Mullins, a former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, said the single biggest threat to our national security is our debt. So
yes,
you're absolutely right. And you said something before the break that I really think bears repeating. You and I are absolutely on the same page on this one. You know, let's take Mr. Obama at his word and say that he believes, you know, raising taxes on the upper 2% of Americans will help the economy, because that's his argument. Well, if that's the case, then raising taxes on everybody would really help the economy. But
of course,
you said something more important. Everybody needs to have skin in this game. And you
yes
know as well as I do, if we raise taxes on the top 2%, you generate $800 billion, a little bit more or less, over the next 10 years. If you do it on the entire tax base, you increase the revenues by about $3 trillion. So there's a major, major difference. And look, it's not a question of what will work for the economy, because Mr. Obama knows raising taxes on the wealthy is not going to make the economy better. He believes it's a matter of fairness. This man is out for
correct
social justice.
That
and that's
correct
what Woodrow Wilson was interested in. That's what FDR was interested in. And
correct
that's why Ben Franklin once said, and it's a quote that we put in our latest book, The Great Debasement. He said, when the people find that they can vote themselves money, that will herald the end of the republic. Are we not there now, Yada?
Absolutely. In fact, I cite that quote on every program that we discuss economics. I cite that program because it's the bane of democracy. Many people have been beguiled into believing that democracy is a good thing. We strive to enact democracies around the world. And yet, if you look at the most recent votes in places like America, in Egypt, in Tunisia, in Libya, in the so-called Palestinian territories, in Iraq, and Iran, democracy is counterproductive.
That's
it
right
actually leads, it makes a bad situation worse.
Right.
And so you are correct that we have put ourselves in a position where we are a dependence society. Hi, Scott.
Well,
you wanted to ask a question? I've got Scott as our producer.
I was going to say
go ahead,
that
Scott.
Benjamin Franklin also said that democracy is two wolves and a sheep deciding what's for lunch.
Right.
It is true. But this whole concept of Americans voting to redistribute money is the very concept of communism. You know, Obama opened himself up for scrutiny, if your eyes are open, in his last State of the Union address. I don't know if you followed his State of the Union address. I did several shows on it because I was just so stunned that he would actually say it. He began by praising the military, but he only praised the military as an ability to transition to the economy. And what he said was he wanted the economy run the same way the U.S. military is run. And he went on to describe from each according to their ability and to each according to their need. And the military is a command and control construct. It is fascism or communism where individuals essentially have no rights. They are told what they have to do. The person at the top gives orders, and everyone loses their free will and must obey those orders. He went on for a half an hour describing his ideal economy, which was run like the U.S. military, which is command and control, and thus the epitome of communism.
You're absolutely right. And I love when you just said it, you know, a commander gives an order and you obey. You don't challenge. There's no open discussion about it. There's no freedom of speech. You do what you're told. You end up in the brig. And you made a point earlier, Yada, that is so important. And I hope the people listen to what you said, because we were never supposed to be a democracy just for those reasons that you cited. We were to
correct
be a constitutional republic, a
correct
republic that you have elected representatives that have sworn to follow a constitution that tells them what they can and what they can't do as a government. And what did we do? One of the very first things we did in 1933, when Roosevelt recalled the gold and Nixon closed the gold window completely, and of course you could argue it all the way back to Lincoln when he formed greenbacks during the Civil War.
Right.
We started emitting bills of credit, i.e. paper money, instead of gold and silver coins being the only currency that the federal government was allowed to issue. And the reason we got away from that is because there's no way that a welfare state can work hand in hand with a gold standard economy. It can't be done because you can't steal money under an honest money system. So if we had politicians in Washington, D.C. that were truly going to adhere to the Constitution, they kick the Constitution around nowadays like it's toilet paper. And we probably shouldn't be going down this road, but the point is that we weren't supposed to be a democracy. Demos, man, cretine, laws. Man's laws versus what we were originally, theoretically, was a theocracy, God's and laws, God's laws. But the men then sat down with a Bible in one hand, a parchment in the other hand, and scripted this incredible document called the Constitution of the United States that was the envy of the world for 130 years until we started playing with it.
We would agree that democracy was the foe of the Founding Fathers. We would not agree that they had a Bible in one hand and a document in the other hand. Most of the architects of America were either Freemasons or Jacobins. But what we would agree on is that prior to America now calling itself a democracy, there's only two historic cases of democracy. Both were hideously bad in terms of their imposition of democracy. One was probably the most savage country to live. It was Sparta. Sparta enslaved all of their neighbors. That was their source of labor. They were extraordinarily warlike, and they were a democracy. They were the longest living democracy in the history of mankind. The second was the Delian League. During the wars with Persia, Greece wanted a buffer. And so what it did is it imposed its government's democracy on the neighboring islands and on the coast of what we now call Turkey to have a have allies kind of that would serve as a buffer zone. It's kind of like Eastern Europe during the domain of the USSR. And they forced democracy on those people, like America is forcing democracy on Iraq and Afghanistan. It failed miserably. And so if you study the history of democracy, you find they're really bad things. And one of the problems is that you have two issues with democracy. And this really is on the same topic. One of the issues is with a democracy is that the average person has no skin in the game. And unless you have skin in the game, you ought not be committing your government to spending money or going off and fighting wars. Skin in the game is the thing that precludes most people from casting their vote wisely. Like if you're not paying any taxes and you're receiving government money, you don't have any skin in the game and you're going to vote foolishly. The second issue, go ahead.
I'm sorry. That's why I've been a big proponent of not, and people are going to go crazy when I say this. If you don't pay taxes in this country, you shouldn't have a vote in this country, in my opinion.
Well, we agree. We agree. In fact, I think most of my listeners would agree with you that if you don't have skin in the game, if you're not making a contribution to the country, you have no right whatsoever to tell the country what it ought to do with somebody else's money.
Right.
Now, the second issue with democracy is that it would be an extraordinary place in time for the preponderance of people to be properly informed and properly rational for them to make these kinds of decisions. You are by far the most articulate guest on the nature of fiat money and the Federal Reserve and the U.S. and world economy. You would be qualified by more qualified than any congressman or senator or president to make decisions on these things. But the vast preponderance of Americans, even those who may have listened to you a few times, they aren't qualified. They do not possess the kind of information and disciplined judgment to make these kinds of decisions. You know,
I agree.
And what we're doing as a country, let me just finish one thought I want to hear. What we're doing as a country, this last election was all about the Democrats going into underprivileged areas, promising a meal if that person would vote. They had absolutely nothing going on in that person's mind other than, if I vote and they take me to the voting place, I get a free meal.
I'm really starting to get frightened that you and I think so much alike. I mean, because you're spot on. I mean, and this is, see, I don't believe this is by mistake, Yada. I believe this is by design. This is why the American education system needs to be redone from the ground up. We teach kids reading, writing, arithmetic. We teach them how to put condoms on a banana. Do we teach them anything about their basic money system?
No.
Do we tell them how a checkbook works? Do we tell them how debt used properly? How that functions?
We don't even teach them how to perform a job. You know, when I went to school, I took electric shop, I took wood shop, I took auto shop. You know, I didn't turn out to be a mechanic, but just learning those skills were great life skills. We don't even teach that anymore.
No,
there's a bigger problem though, Craig, with our educational system. What we teach people is how not to be judgmental. If you, and that's the whole nature of political correctness.
Yeah, and how,
right. Well, and if you can't be judgmental, how in the world are you going to process the enormous amounts of information so you can reach a rational conclusion?
Sure, there is no right or wrong anymore.
And yet there is, which is that most people don't know it. Knowing what is right economically, as Craig Smith will return to our guest after the break. This is Shattering Myths. Segment of the first hour of Shattering Myths. We have as our special guest Craig Smith. Craig is the CEO and the founder of Swiss America. You can find him at buygold.com. It is probably the only investment now that will preclude you from continuing to lose value in your currency. Most people don't understand, Craig, and I know that you do, that our currency not only isn't backed by any asset, not only does it have no intrinsic value, our currency is actually backed by debt. It is a debt instrument. It's an obligation, is it not?
Oh, yeah. If you and I could look at debt as an asset like the government does, think about how the average balance sheet in America would look, you know.
Yeah, but it is a liability. If we were to actually wipe out the debt, we'd actually wipe out the currency because America's fiat money is a liability. It's not an asset.
That's right, and that's why in my latest book, The Great Debasement, you said something about Sparta. It piqued a thought while you were talking.
Uh-huh.
If you look at the Athenian Empire, if you look at the Roman Empire, if you look at the Ottoman Empire, the British Empire, and now America, they all had one common thread. Their beginning of their demise all started with the debasement of their money. When we finished the book, we noticed that the Ottoman Empire had the same thing happen from 1808 to 1848. And that's why in the book, The Great Debasement, we've shown that what's happening in America, what started 100 years ago, is very predictable where it's going to end. And you were right, Yada. It's going to collapse. Now, nobody wants to hear that.
But it's going to collapse.
It has to collapse. And that's why before the end of the program, I need to make sure that your producer puts me on hold so I can get your address to send you a copy of my latest book, The Great Debasement. Because I think it may be the single most important book we've ever written. And if you'd like, if your listeners want a copy of it, if they call 800-289-2646 and mention that they're listening to Shattering Myths with Yada, they will go ahead and the publisher will send a copy of the book. They'll actually pay the postage and everything. There's no charge. If they promise to read the book and pass it on to somebody, because I'm convinced if we can educate the American people, if the media won't do it, but programs like Shattering Myths will, if we can educate the American people, Yada, and show them the truth about their money system, they'll be able to make decisions to keep the government from stealing the already $222 trillion that they've stolen from the American people that we document in the book.
We are very close to agreeing here. There's only one slight disagreement. First of all, that number is 800-289-2646 for the Great Debasement. We both agree in the value of education. telling people the truth, even if it is as unpopular as this truth is, which their government is robbing them and stealing their future. There is nothing more important than education. We agree up to that point. And I think that it is incumbent upon us to do the best and most complete and accurate job we can of informing people, particularly on an issue of this consequence. Our government is becoming unreliable, whole effect counterproductive. The only place we differ is a place that we may not differ at all. I don't think there's anything that can be done to avert the collapse.
I agree. I think
that individuals can protect themselves from the collapse by becoming better educated, but the collapse is inevitable. We have gone way too far in so many areas that would require to be fixed that we're not going to fix any of them.
You and I are in total agreement on that. My book only merely points out that, look, it's going to happen. Yada, you're absolutely right. You and I one day will say, unfortunately, we told you so, because it's going to happen. The math is very clear now.
Right.
What we say is that since it's going to happen, you got to look for where you're going to hide. And I don't tell people to just go out and put all their money in gold, although it probably wouldn't be a bad strategy. What I tell people is what they have to look for. Most people wait to put the boards up on the front door, after the hurricane starts. You need to do it before the hurricane starts.
Right.
And most people, I don't know if you'd agree with this or not, Yada. Most people, I think, are lulled into a false sense of security that there's going to be a way they fix it and it's all going to be better. It's too big now. It has to collapse. I don't want it to collapse. I know you don't want it to collapse.
No, because I have children. It's going to collapse.
Exactly.
And the only issue is, will it collapse 10 years from now, 15 years from now, or 20 years from now?
I think
it will absolutely collapse within
10.
Yeah, I think the absolute outside is between 15 and 20 years, and there is a very high likelihood that America will be no longer sovereign, and that it will be completely and utterly bankrupt, and this will be a country of anarchy within 10 to 15 years. That's how bad it is.
Explain why, because rates will have to go up to save the currency. We're doomed. I mean, I hate to say it that way, but the economy is doomed.
Craig, you're my favorite guest. I hope that we'll be able to do this again sometime soon. I really enjoy having you on this program. Craig Smith, you'll find him at buygold.com, and you can call him at 800-289-2646 to get a free copy of his book. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths.
Howdy, folks. Pharmacist Ben here, nutritional pharmacist and skincare chemist. If you've heard me on my daily health and wellness program, The Bright Side, you know I'm on a mission to spread the good news about the power.